Hey, book lovers, if you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you may want to listen up because we've got a couple of new things to tell you about Libro.fm. And if you're new here, we want you to know that Libro.fm is the best place to buy your audiobooks because it allows you to buy from your favorite local and independent bookstore. You can choose from more than 150,000 audiobook titles and get recommendations from booksellers around the country, all for the same price as that other company. You know which one I'm talking about. Except with Libro.fm, you'll be part of a different story, one that supports community. And now, just in time for the holidays, we wanted to let you know that you can also give audiobook memberships to the book lovers in your life. They come in 3, 6, and 12-month durations. Recipients will receive all of their audiobook credits up front, so no waiting each month for a new book. And they will also receive 30% off all additional purchases during the course of their membership. You can check out the link in our show notes for this deal. And as always, listeners of the Bookstore Podcast can get 2 months for the price of one when they use our new promo code, BookstorePod, all one word. That's a new promo code. Don't use the old one. At checkout at Libro.fm. That's Libro.fm. With each listen, take pride in knowing you're supporting local bookstores.
Welcome to the bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book.
I am Becca.
And I am Corinne. And I don't think we have any news to share, but we will just give some programming updates. This month is August, and it is Women in Translation Month. That's kind of like a big popular, I don't know what you call it, when the, like a month or a day has like a special thing, but that's the big one for August. And you know that we love books in translation, so we always celebrate it here. The books that we have chosen, the one we read for today, is Minor Detail by Adania Shibli. It's translated from the Arabic. And Becca chose Disoriental by Nagar Javadi. And what is that translated from?
That is translated from the French.
French. Okay. You can find both of them probably at your local bookstore or library. I know that Minor Detail is available as an audiobook on Hoopla. So if you use Hoopla through your library, you can get it there.
Yes. Same with Disoriental. I'm not sure if it's audio, but I know it's an ebook for sure available on Hoopla.
Great. And then just looking forward, September, we are reading YA or, you know, middle grade books because it's back to school. So we just thought we'd go back to school with it. My choice for that is The Marrow Thieves by Sherry DeMoline. And Becca, your choice was?
My choice is Lotso by Darcy Little Badger. And I wanted to add, we chose YA, but like our theme for September is YA or books that were banned in school.
Oh,
so
okay.
You can also pick banned books. But yeah, we both chose YA.
Yes. Great. Probably knew that at one point about the banned books, but I have a single brain cell. So yeah, you can find those books, you know, at your library. Again, support your local library. It's hard out there right now. A local library to me, not my personal local library, but one that is in the next county over, just had all of their funding slashed by some people who are afraid of books about gay kids. So yes, support your local library, please. And thank you. And also any librarians out there, we love you very, very much. So let's get talking about Minor Detail then. I'm just going to read the description from the flap because honestly, it's a very short book. And I, knowing me, I'll wind up making the description actually longer than the book actually is. So here we go. So this book, like I said, is Minor Detail. It is written by Adania Shibli. I think, let's see, it was published by New Directions in English. The translation by Elizabeth Jaquette, and that was published in 2020. The translation was the original copyright for the book is 2016. So, in spare haunting prose, Minor Detail cuts to the heart of an experience of erasure, dispossession, and life under occupation in Palestine and reveals the persistent difficulty of piecing together the shards of a narrative concealed by a fragmented history. Minor Detail begins during the summer of 1949, 1 year after the war that the Palestinians mourn as the Nakba, the catastrophe that led to the displacement and expulsion of more than 700,000 people. Israeli soldiers attack a group of Bedouins in the Negev desert, killing everyone except a teenage girl. They capture the girl and later rape, kill her, and bury her in the sand. Many years later, in the near present day, a woman in Ramallah tries to uncover some of the details surrounding this particular rape and murder and becomes fascinated to the point of obsession, not only because of the nature of the crime, but because it was committed exactly 25 years to the day before she was born. Adanya Shibley masterfully overlays these two translucent narratives to evoke a present forever haunted by the past. So that takes care of it. As you can tell, the book deals with some very difficult topics. If that's something that you're not interested in or can't handle, then you can skip this episode. We will probably be spoiling the ending for sure. So my suggestion, if you're interested in this book at all, is it's 100 pages long. You could probably just read it first. Otherwise, we will be letting you know about the very big spoiler before we discuss it.
Yeah. Just, I guess, to start out with, I was shocked and did not expect to be put in the perspective of one of the soldiers.
Yeah.
I almost feel like that's like sort of an added content warning for anybody listening to this. Is it's extremely disturbing, and he's some kind of officer, like he's in charge of other mm-hmm. officers. I'm not familiar with military terms, and I can't remember if they were mentioned in the book. To be put in his, like, for him doing things, but you don't know about what he's really thinking about.
Right. It is third person,
yeah,
but it is just talking specifically about what he's doing, and what he's doing tends to be terrible.
And
so,
the impersonal, like, factor of that, of how he goes about doing things, just adds this layer of horror to reading about it, I think.
It is very impersonal. I had another word for it, but then you said impersonal, and that's probably better. And now I also can't remember my word for it. It's like a very matter of fact, and like there's not a lot of emotion carried with it at all in the way it's described, all of his actions, which in a way I think is really interesting just because of the fact that, like, they're out in the desert in this region that's kind of close to Egypt, I think. And it's just, like, a lot of sand and dunes in any direction they look. It's incredibly hot. So everything feels, like, very visceral in a way, like very close. And so, like, the descriptions that are just, like, very practical descriptions of these things are really realistic, and then also getting very practical descriptions of terrible violence is very disturbing in there with it, like the same way that you would describe the weather. So that's very difficult to read.
Yeah, it's also something that I think Shibley does, like, throughout the whole book, is the writing has so much about literal minor details, like the officer will take off his shirt and wash and then put his shirt back on. And it's sort of, the whole book is full of those details, that really mundane details. So I thought that was interesting or something, the way she did that. Because, you know, the whole idea or theme of it is the rape and murder of one girl, which is in the context of this entire war and catastrophe. And way more murders. It is a minor detail. It's one person, right? But, mm-hmm. like, it still is one person, and we should care. And that should be important enough to mention in histories, even if it's just one, in terms of, like, what did you say? Like, hundreds of thousands of people had to be, mm-hmm. were displaced from this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the way that, and okay, I guess I'll go right into what I was thinking about as I was reading this too, is that it reminds me of the book that we read last year for Women in Translation, The Twilight Zone. I'm trying to think. Oh, Nona Fernandez. This and that book are really interesting, well, just kind of fascinating ways in which people attempt to deal with atrocities that have affected their countries and the people that they know in incredibly, like, in ways that we couldn't possibly understand unless we had to deal with it ourselves. And I think, I don't know, I guess it's just so fascinating because you're looking at something that happens to, like we said, like an entire country or an entire culture of people, something like that. And then we're looking at an artist, in this case, two writers, novelists, who try to wrap their heads around, like, how to tell the story of it. And it's so complicated because, like, ultimately you get down to it and it's people who did it to other people. And I don't know, it just seems crazy to try to figure out how to tell that story. And I think this book gets into how crazy it feels to try to tell that story through one tiny murder, which again is huge because that's an entire human life, but like in the context of a war that ruined how many lives or whatever. I don't know. I'm really fascinated by like the endeavor of trying to do this at all.
It reminds me of something that people say a lot in that, and I do agree with this to some extent, the fact that like, well, we can still worry about more than one thing at a time, right?
Yeah.
But yes. Like also there's a point where I think we kind of can't. I think our brains get to some of these numbers with these tragedies, with war and everything, to where it just becomes a number. Like, you can't really understand the suffering when it's on such a huge scale.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess that's why I think these books are so important, because we sort of have to have it simplified down. And I mean, simplified is a bad word. I don't know how else to say it, but down to like really understanding like this one life, and then, you know, extend it on to the 700,000 who were hurt by this.
And I think part of the craziness about it is that you would think that maybe if you could distill this situation down to one thing. So she tries to distill the situation down to this one murder that happened, that somehow it would become clearer. And like, she finds out that it's impossible to even find out more about it. And that when she tries, like, the people that she goes to don't even know that it happened. Or if it did happen, and they do happen to know that it happened, they have a completely different explanation for what it was. And everything just becomes, like, more murky and messed up. And it's just, yeah, like frustrating and impossible that like the truth is just so complicated, or maybe not even complicated, because I suppose there is a truth somewhere. But like the fact is that you can't really find one that anybody agrees on with it, too. I don't know what I'm saying exactly, but it's just it's like The Twilight Zone feels like one of those novels that's like talking about how impossible it is to even find truth in a situation like this.
I agree completely. It also makes me think about like who gets to be written about in history.
Yes.
And who gets to be written about respectfully. Eduardo Galeano, who is a Uruguayan writer, like writes a lot about it, obviously, since he's from a country that was colonized. And I looked up a quote, and it's kind of, you know, it goes, it's called the nobodies, like who don't speak languages, but dialects, who don't have religions, but superstitions. And it ends saying, who do not appear in the history of the world, but in the police blotter of the local paper, the nobodies who are not worth the bullet that kills them. And that's what it reminds me, this book reminded me of, like, immediately, because that's exactly where the Bedouin girl ends up, right? Is just like in this tiny thing that the woman in the second half of the book reads.
Well, also, I mean, interesting because she uses the word nobody to describe her. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find the quote when she's trying to talk herself out of going, because this woman who she's going to try, she reads about it in the newspaper and she's going to try to find out more about the story and what happened. But she lives in region C or A. I don't remember exactly what it is, but if you're not familiar with Palestine, the country is divided into these regions that people can't travel between. Palestinians specifically, like, really aren't allowed to travel between, depending on their identification. And she's trying to talk herself out of doing it, because in order to do this, she's going to have to borrow a coworker's ID so that she can travel between these two zones. And she says something about how pointless this is. Why would she try to tell this story? Like, this girl is just a nobody. But yeah, I don't know if I'll be able to find it. She says, there's no point in me feeling responsible. Like, she's a nobody, and I will forever remain a nobody whose voice nobody will hear. And I think she's trying to say that, like, it sounds like she's just saying that she is nobody. I don't think that the narrator actually feels that way, but that is essentially what she is to history at this point, and probably will be forever.
Yeah. Yeah. To, I guess, kind of skip ahead, since we're talking about so the first part of the book is from this officer's perspective. Essentially all that happens is they capture this girl, and then they say, like, what should we do with her? You have two choices. And then the second choice is, let's just use her and rape her.
Yeah.
And everybody chooses that one. So that's what they do. And that it's, I'm going to sound so naive and sheltered and privileged when I say this, but it's so hard for me to conceive of people who can dehumanize others so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens all the time. I'm very aware of that. It's something that I've never been in that situation. So that's why I think it's hard for me to, like, it's like reading about serial killers. Like, I just don't fundamentally understand how humans can do that, but we do it all the time. But it just made me think of, like, how do we do that? Like, soldiers must be taught to dehumanize their enemy, right? Or else they can't perform their duties.
Right. Like, it's either taught or it's just, like, inherent in the practice of whatever it is that they're doing day to day.
Yeah.
And I think, like, there is a certain amount of, and I'm not trying to say that she makes these people seem sympathetic, because she doesn't, but the repetition of that section where she just kind of describes, they go out on their little reconnaissance missions, and then they come back and they might get to eat a little bit or whatever, and then they go to sleep. And, like, you know, descriptions of him washing himself because it's so hot and sweaty. And that happens, like, multiple times a day, and just, like, the oppressive heat and stuff. Like, I think there is a little bit of how completely, like, deadening that lifestyle can, like, be for a person too, to have to deal with. And so, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, everything about it is just, I don't know, just kind of grueling and just not something you would ever want to have to deal with. It feels like, you know, people who end up being used by some greater political power just end up using other people too, just kind of, like, for no reason, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like what you said, like the repetition, it shows sort of, what do I want to say? The boredom and the, like, average dayness of it all. Like, this is just a thing that soldiers do, and it's not terribly different from any other day, and probably what any other soldier group is doing. I think that the way it was written, like, really makes it feel like, well, this is just another day to these people.
Yeah.
And how desensitized everything is when you're in a war.
Yeah. I don't know, because there's not a lot of context for the book either, and I'm not going to pretend that I know really all that much of anything about this particular war or all that much about what's happened since then. But I think, you know, more importantly than, like, knowing all of that context is because this feels like sort of, so, like, it seems weird to call it slice of life, because slice of life tends to be something much cuter, I feel like, but that this book is kind of zoomed in to these like two very sort of pinpointed experiences in this context, you get more or less just like what it feels like to live in these situations. So mm-hmm. there's the what it feels like to live a little bit as a soldier in this really remote place under like very hostile kind of living conditions out in a desert, and then what it feels like to live and to have lived your entire life under occupation, which I think is maybe the best part of this novel, is she's describing, even before she heads out on this mission to find information about this case, she's describing one day when she tries to get to work and how normal, like completely normal it feels for her. She's on her way to work and then there's kind of these barricades put up and there's like nobody in this part of town and she's not really sure why, but she's just going to go to work anyway. I mean, she can kind of guess that probably there's going to be a bombing or like a shelling that's going to happen. And it does. She gets to her office. These soldiers pull a gun on her. And her reaction is, first, she's scared to have a gun pulled on her. But her reaction is then to find a different way into her office building because she's just going to go to work. Mm-hmm. And she does. And they bomb a building nearby, like next door. One of her coworkers comes in to open the windows and she protests. But he's like, we have to open them or all the windows are going to shatter. And she's like, fine, I guess. And he does open them. But then she's mad that he did it because after this building blows up, dust gets in her office and she has a hard time getting her work done. So just like the utter banality of living around like so much violence, but still just trying to go about your daily life. I think that's something that like we can't imagine. We would love to think that we would do something differently or behave differently or whatever. But I think there is just that instinct that eventually kicks in that's like, well, I guess I'm just going to keep living my life. And that's what you do. And I don't know, that was really scary to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That and like, what other choice do I have?
Right.
You know, you can't, I'm not saying any, how do I say this? I'm going to say you, but it's just like the royal you, right? I'm not like telling anybody to do something. What I imagine is you just don't know what else to do other than live. Like you can't stay home in a cellar all the time because something might get bombed. Like you still have to live your life. You don't really have any other choice. And it's just like your brain almost can't continue in that state of like fight or flight day after day. You get to a point where dust in your office from a bombing is just an annoyance.
Right, where they killed four people or yeah. whatever their target was. Yeah, but and she talks about how, I mean, a big part of that section is how she can't stop crossing borders. And it's a problem that she has. And I think probably it's a natural instinct to just want to be able to go wherever you want to go. So I'm not mm-hmm. saying that like she's crazy disobedient or whatever. It's just that this instinct that she has to go where she wants to go is incredibly dangerous for her because it could mean life or death or a prison sentence or something in this world that she's living in. And yeah, so she does also talk about how she has tried her hardest to make her world just sitting at the table in her dining room, in the window and working, whatever that happens to be, and then going to the office. She has tried to make her world that small in order to fit into this. And it's, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like very devastating.
Yeah.
We couldn't understand something like that at all.
Yeah. I want to talk about, too, her part of the novel was in present tense, wasn't it?
Yes.
So I listened to it on audio and I found that really interesting because normally I hate present tense, but I think because I was listening to it, it actually helped me. Mm-hmm. Again, enjoy is the wrong word for a book like this, but understand it more because the present tense did like heighten that fear of like what is going to happen and the tension. that she experiences.
Well, this is the correct usage of that tense.
Yes, yes.
Generally speaking, a lot of the times that I find it doesn't work is when you're reading a book and you actually need to have, like, the thoughts of the person, and you're just not really able to get what you need. But this one, yeah, it, in order for the pacing and in order for the ending to work, it has to be written the way that it is.
Yeah. So a little bit about her travels. So she visits a military museum, and where else does she visit?
An archive.
Okay, that's right. And she...
in another region.
She has to talk to the archivist, and that's one, like, very scary part, because you're so nervous for her to have her identity discovered by this person. But then at the same time, it's like, how can she possibly go on talking to this guy and knowing that he's, I don't want to say on the other side, but sort of.
I think the complicated thing here with that, and that I felt throughout kind of like the rest of it too, is just how strange it is, because, like, she's not really describing them as enemies. These are people who are being helpful to her based on what they know about her, which is they think that she is Israeli because they also are. And I think the thing that makes it so complicated, and maybe not complicated, but just, like, devastating and sad to me, is she asks him when she leaves, like, is there a place that I could stay the night? And he tells her to head to this little settlement, and there should be a place where tourists get to stay. And the fact is that, like, her status as a Palestinian, she wouldn't ever really get to be considered a tourist. Mm-hmm. I don't believe. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I don't really know. But she's so easily able to pass as an Israeli here. And then when she gets to the settlement, everybody there is helpful to her. And, like, it just, it feels absolutely crazy making that, like, I don't know, they've created these enemies, and, like, it's just so easy to pass as, like, not the enemy, right? Yeah. It just, it's one of those things that just, again, it feels like, what the hell are we doing? Because they're nice, they're friendly, they're just regular people. And I think, like, I don't know, I don't want to get into it because I don't want to accidentally stick my foot in something. But, like,
well,
because I don't know what it's like. But again, like, on a just everyday personal level, like, most of these people are capable of being kind and generous, and somehow, like, we choose not to be when we know just slightly different information, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's, like, the part where she says her name, and she says she thought of the most non-Palestinian name she could. And it's like, right, that's it. It,
yes.
Just a name, and just a name would instantly give her away as being Palestinian also. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, again, I'm not going to go into any detail, but just the general thought of, like, what have we done? What have we created in the world that we view each other like this? I mean, I know that's a very, it's very broad, like, staring into the abyss kind of comment, but that's how it feels.
No, it's just, it sucks. It really sucks. And sucks is, like, such a stupid, simple, like, word to use for it. But I don't know.
I mean, again, it just goes back to, like, our brains aren't even capable of, like, really, and I mean ours, me and yours, aren't capable of, like, understanding and articulating how it feels to read, you know, something like this.
Yeah. So, big, big spoiler. You can skip this. Maybe just skip ahead a few minutes. Should be over fairly quickly. But yeah. What do we think? How do we feel?
Well, so she got shot and died, right?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, I think it was, she's now becoming the minor detail.
Yeah.
Because to those soldiers, they're shooting an interloper who's not supposed to be there. This is their job. That's their job description. So that's what they did. They're going to fill out some paperwork, and it's not going to go anywhere. And it's going to be the same. She is going to become the Bedouin girl that she read about.
What I loved, and I don't loved again, weird, but in terms of, like, the way this was written and the skill with which, like, Shibley kind of wove these repetitive elements back in was like, you know, she had spilled gasoline on herself, so she smelled mm-hmm. like gasoline. Like all of those things, those little details that tied it back into the murder of the girl. They could have seemed really, really cheesy, but they didn't. I think they in a way were kind of banal enough to really force home like the fact that like you said, like this is just kind of an everyday occurrence. Like this mm-hmm. is just what happens and it'll just keep going.
Yeah.
I thought that was really skillfully done. Like, I don't know. I don't want to say poetic, but I guess maybe a little bit. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Devastating again, but I don't know. I'm really grateful to have had the opportunity to read this. I'm glad that this was translated because it's not, I don't know, like it's just, it's such a complicated situation and I don't get a lot of opportunities to see this specific perspective represented. And so, yeah, I appreciate this work a lot.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think again, yes, very skillfully done. And like I said, I read it on audio and I don't like fiction books on audio as much as nonfiction, but I think it really heightened it for me. And mm-hmm. the narrator, who I can't remember who it is right now, was really did a good job as well. But yeah, I'm glad, again, glad is a bad word to use, but I'm glad you picked this. I also wanted to add about the ending. She, before she dies, she has a ride, gets a ride or talks to some old woman.
She gives an old woman a ride.
Gives an old woman a ride. And she realizes after she drops the old woman off that that's who she should have talked to about the Bedouin girl's murder, because the old yeah. woman is very old. And that just felt like another, again, you know, the people who are going to know the history, the true history, who experienced it. And they're not necessarily going to be the people who are in the history books and making the decisions about who gets to be in yeah. them or not.
They're rarely keeping that history in an official sense, especially yeah. if it's like the state's history. So.
Right. It's going to be, again, like a minor person, somebody mm-hmm. who is in broader history, like insignificant. But in her case, in the narrator's case, this old woman might have had the significant details that she wants to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what a tightly written book, too. I mean, it had to be for its length, but it pulls it off really well.
Yeah. Just really a really excellent book.
I highly recommend it. You'd probably be in a good place mentally for it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's a short one this time, but it's a fairly short book. Thanks for listening to The Bookstore.
If you would like to support the podcast beyond listening, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thebookstore or rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
And you can find all the ways to contact us at thebookstorepodcast.com.
Our next book discussion will be Disoriental by Nagar Javadi. You can find it at your local bookstore or library and read along with us.
The Bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becky Yunk and Corinne Keener. Technical and production support is provided by Josh Bourdon and Zach Titus.
And John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.